This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
You're listening to New Books in Geography, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm your host for today, Stentor Danielson, from the Department of Geography, Geology, and the Environment at Slippery Rock University. Today, I'll be talking to James C. Rhodes and Susan Ramlow, others along with Dan B. Thomas of Cultivating Q Methodology, Essays Honoring Stephen R. Brown, published last year by the International Society for the Scientific Study of Subjectivity. Dr. Rhodes, Dr. Ramlow, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
So to start off, why don't you each tell our listeners a little bit about your own background and how you came to be working on this book?
All right. Well, let me start. I am a professor of political science at Westminster College, and I've been there since the early 1990s. And I've been interested in subjectivity for a long time and did my graduate work at Kent State University and was fortunate enough to have Stephen Brown, the foremost expert on Q methodology, as my dissertation advisor. And so that really began my career in using Q methodology as a research tool. And I teach in the political science department at Westminster and teach some of the standard courses that one might expect in political science, courses in the presidency, in the Congress, and those such things. But I also have an interest in the interconnection between politics and popular culture. So I teach coursework in that area as well. And so that's, I guess, basically who I am.
All right, well, I'll go next. I'm Sue Ramlow. I am a professor at the University of Akron in Akron, Ohio. I had a very different kind of pathway, a much more crooked pathway to Q methodology. I actually started off as an industrial physicist in the radiation detection industry, which seems pretty far away from Q. And then I became a faculty member at the University of Akron in 1994. And as part of my post-dissertation, I was at a conference, not a Q conference, and somebody who was one of my peers at the university mentioned Q methodology to me and how he thought it would solve all the questions that I had about student evaluation of teaching, suggested that I get the little green book from Sage called Q Methodology by Bruce McCune and Dan Thomas. And I got totally sucked into Q. I did a lot of physics education research to start off. And then I have kind of gone all over the place, everything from healthcare to STEM education to just higher ed research. So a little bit of everything, I guess you could say. I see Q studies everywhere I look.
All right. So at this point, probably we've got some listeners thinking, what the heck is Q methodology? So can you give us the overview, the big picture? What is Q methodology? How does it work? What is it useful for?
Well, it's a method that was developed by William Stevenson to measure subjectivity. And Stevenson was a prolific scholar. He had held PhDs in both psychology and physics. And he innovated Q methodology, which is a means of, again, measuring people's subjective viewpoints about any topic that one could imagine. And it's done by rank ordering items. And once you get a number of people to do that, rank ordering these items, you factor analyze them, which is a statistical technique. And it demonstrates that there are different viewpoints that are shared. And you can describe and compare and contrast those viewpoints. It's a means of bringing science into studying subjective viewpoints. And so its utility goes across all of the human sciences. It goes, you know, Q methodology has been used to study people's reactions to literature, to motion pictures, to political ideas, to elements in geography, and all kinds of enterprises that people are involved in. And I know that's a pretty broad overview, and it may still leave a lot of questions. I'll let Sue carry on from there. Maybe I'll circle back with a few other points.
Okay, yeah, I guess we should have practiced an elevator speech, huh? Subjectivity basically relates to viewpoints, perspectives, opinions, judgments, personal preferences. So it's not about facts, it's about what's internal to people, which makes it really difficult to see because you know what you think in your head, but it's pretty difficult even to explain in a conversation what you think to somebody else. So Q allows us through the sorting of items, usually statements, to get a snapshot of individuals' viewpoints based on a condition of instruction. So we might ask students to sort a set of 50 statements into a grid from most like their view to most unlike their view based on, right, how they feel about a certain class, right? So they might have statements like, this class is boring, this class is valuable to my future, all kinds of subjective statements that they order or organize in order to represent how they feel about, right, a certain course or anything, as Jim pointed out so well. It literally can be applied to any kind of discipline. And then, right, we use statistics to group sorts that are similar. And those similar sorts that are grouped mathematically are called factors, and each factor represents a unique viewpoint. So we might have 20 people sort 50 statements and end up with two or three unique views that, through the way the analyses work, we can not only see who is represented by those views, but we can describe those views in great detail. So it's kind of a combination of words and mathematics, or qualitative and quantitative aspects of research, so that we can see where people align, and we can find out by studying their subjectivity a lot of about their behavior. Maybe if we want to make a course more interesting, we could use the results of a Q study to make some changes, right? So we can use it in assessment, we can use it in marketing. It's just kind of endless.
Yeah, and I would also make the point that it's extremely useful in discovering what these various discourses are. You can imagine a situation in which, let's say, you're the department chair of a department, and you've got some issues going on among the faculty in the department. A Q study of those viewpoints might help to clarify the things that are not only that people are disagreeing about, but in that instance, the things that they are agreeing with, and those are the things that you might want to be able to move on in a policy way, right? So you have two groups that you think are disparate, and in many ways they are, but there are certain things that they agree with, and you can then make great progress as a unit on those things that they agree with. So there's various ways of using this. It's not only to point out what are the differences amongst groups, but what might be similarities.
And I'll add too that most people are used to doing surveys where they have to respond, right, 1 to 5 about how they feel about an individual statement. And typically when those kinds of methods are used to look at opinions, for instance, right, they look at everything in aggregate. So everything kind of as a normative approach. So they take the average of all those values and come up with an overall opinion, but that opinion might not represent any actual opinions. I sometimes tell the story of a former department chair where part of our process of evaluating him was to rank him on a scale of 1 to 7. And when all the numbers were crunched, right, he had about somewhere between 3.5 and 4 out of 7. But when you read the qualitative comments that people had also submitted, it just didn't seem like there was a middle of the road kind of view. And so when the head of that committee plotted the data points for the rankings the faculty gave, there were basically lots of rankings that were 1 and 2, so really weren't happy at all with this department chair's performance. And others were 6 to 7. They really liked that department chair. So obviously there wasn't one view that was at 3.5 or somewhere in the middle. And Q lets you tease out those differences, and that makes it incredibly useful. And it eliminates this assumption that there's just one view that we can find by aggregating all of the values collected.
Yeah, and just to add my own perspective into the picture here, right? You could even find out that all those people that were ranking that guy really low, there's actually like two separate camps that like hate him for totally different reasons. And Q would let mm-hmm. you tease that out as well.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I just want to echo as well the point of how many different areas Q is applicable to. And this is something that I think, you know, comes through in the selection of chapters in the book, because, you know, here I am, I'm the host of the Geography Channel, and I've used Q in a variety of geography and environmental studies kind of context with Superfund site cleanups and wildfire management and environmental justice. And, you know, I'm talking to a physicist and a political scientist, and, you know, hopefully this interview will get cross-posted across a number of the NBN channels as well, because there's so many different areas that you could apply Q to.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you just look at the three of us, I mean, we've all published Q studies in such wide variety of, you know, areas. And even though we all have our own disciplines, and much of the, of course, what we do is obviously related to our disciplines, but, you know, you just take a look at some of the things that it really is a wide variety.
Yeah. Okay. So now that we know what Q method is, let's talk about who Stephen R. Brown is. Why is he important enough to have a whole essay collection dedicated to him?
All right. Well, I'll start again, and Sue can certainly follow up. Stephen Brown was one of William Stevenson's graduate students. And he has made it his life, in his academic life, to promote the ideas of William Stevenson and Q methodology. And there's nobody who has written more about Q methodology than Stephen Brown. And within that group of Q methodological scholars, he has enormous reach. I can't imagine of the people who do Q methodology that they haven't at one time or another or more consulted him about their own projects. And not only is he a prolific writer of an author of Q methodological works, he is a mentor to so many of us in the Q community. I described him earlier as the foremost expert on Q methodology, and I don't think there's really any debate about that. He runs, not only has he published quite a bit, he runs a listserv in which he responds pretty regularly, as I think all of us would attest, to people's questions, whether they're elementary kinds of questions by newbies or whether they are sophisticated questions by veteran Q methodologists. He's also began the journal and the society from which that journal is sponsored, the International Society for the Scientific Study of Subjectivity, and their journal, Operant Subjectivity. So he's just been a seminal figure in, I would argue, second only to Stevenson in the study of subjectivity. Sue, I'm not sure I left you much to...
That's okay. I concur. I refer to him, and Steve is so modest that I don't really think he appreciates it when I refer to him as the living god of Q methodology, but he really is. He's just, and it's amazing. I mean, his knowledge of Q and historically the paths of Q and what came from William Stevenson, he's just like an encyclopedia of knowledge. And like Jim said, he's always willing to give and help others learn more about Q, answer their questions. I mean, that's really how we ended up with the title Cultivating Q Methodology, because we bounced a number of titles around, and in the end we decided that that's really what Steve has done with his academic career, despite the fact that he has been retired from Kent State for a number of years, although he still teaches no longer in political science, but in their, I think it's assessment and measurement. Yeah. But he is in his 80s and still giving and talking about Q all the time. And we really wanted something to help him see how important his contribution has been to Q, but also to each of us. The authors of chapters are really just a sampling of people who owe a great deal to Steve and his endless support and help.
And when we first started kicking around the idea of a book in his honor, the three co-editors all represent different stages in Steve's career, which was, I think, very fortunate that it worked out that way. Dan Thomas was one of Steve's first graduate students, among his first graduate students. And so, you know, he was working with Steve when Steve was quite young and, you know, was starting to make a name for himself and so forth. I came along a bit later, and by that time, Steve was in mid-career. He had already cemented his role as a leader in the Q methodology movement. And then Sue got to know him a bit later, and by that time, he was a senior scholar who, you know, had been the had won the Laswell Award at the International Society of Political Psychology. He had been elected the executive director of the International Society of Political Psychology. So we came to know Steve at various points in his career, and I think that made for a nice rounded out for our editorship of this volume.
Yeah, so, and this might be a good place for me to offer my own Stephen Brown story, which isn't in the book because I wasn't involved with this particular publication. That, you know, my dissertation used Q, and I submitted the first article from my dissertation and got a message from the editor of the journal saying, hey, one of the reviewers wants to do like a published response to your article. And when it came out, it was Stephen Brown writing this response to my article. And so my first reaction was to be like mortified, like, you know, the biggest name in Q method, you know, felt the need to like write this thing about why he disagreed with my first article as a brand new professor. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to like, you know, crawl in a hole and never come out. But then shortly after that, I got a message from him saying, hey, I saw that you're at Slippery Rock, which is just down the road from Kent State. Why don't you come out? We'll have dinner and you can present on your research to my Q method grad seminar. So, you know, just the most gracious and, you know, helpful, you know, probably the coolest thing that could have happened to a brand new PhD in the first semester of their first full-time teaching job, to have the sort of leading figure of the field that I was working on invite me out to present to his class right after having like rebutted my first article in print. So,
you know, that's a great story, and it's common with him. You know, I mean, that he's, that's just the way he is. And he has been so helpful to so many people. And I make the point in my introduction to him that he is also very good at letting people mature in Q methodology. And so, you know, he's there to guide, but he understands that at the beginning of everybody's, you know, foray into this, there are going to be certain things that they don't quite get yet, but they will get. And when they do get it, he's there to work with you again at a sort of different level. So he's just a really tremendous educator, as well as a great scholar.
Okay, so let's talk then a bit about the specific chapters that make up this book. So looking down the list of chapter authors, you've got a lot of the big names in Q, sort of the next tier down under Stephen Brown in terms of prominence in the Q community, but then also some people that I personally didn't recognize that aren't quite as prominent, and they're people from across a lot of different disciplines and fields. So can you talk about the set of authors that you've got, sort of how you found all those folks and got them involved with the book project, and kind of how they collectively represent the breadth of the Q community?
Yeah. Well, we reached out to a number of people that we thought would want to contribute to this project. And frankly, there were almost no one who said no. And those who said no didn't say no because they didn't think this was a worthy project. It was just that they were at a stage in their life when they were retired or something, and they just, you know, weren't wanting to be involved in any kind of writing any longer. And we looked for people too who had long relationships with Steve, in either having been graduate students of his, or someone that he had worked with over time in the society. And so there are people like Mike Strickland, who was also a graduate student of William Stevenson's, as well as Rob Logan, as well there are a number of a few of those folks that are still with us. And then again, people who've just been involved in the society for a long time. Sue, do you have any other thoughts about that?
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, there might be people who by the time you and I kind of got into the Q groove, had already basically retired or were no longer deeply involved, like Dave Gillespie, who was one of Steve's students who did work on third parties in political science. So, but his work is older, but that was part of the idea that we could kind of put together varied stories about how people either use Q or what working with Steve Brown meant to them. And so that's how we ended up with those three different sections, the legacy section, the methodology section, and the application section, because we pretty much gave authors kind of free rein within pretty broad guidelines about what they wanted to write in their chapters.
Yeah, that's actually a great segue, because I wanted to talk about kind of each of those three sections. So, you know, we don't really have time to talk about each individual chapter on its own, but we can kind of talk at them at that level of the sections and some of the different kinds of things that readers will find in this book. So let's start with the first section, the legacy section, that is more about, you know, Stephen Brown himself and his role in the development of Q. So can you talk a bit about, you know, what's in that section? What do we learn from those chapters?
Sue, why don't you start with that? I feel like I'm starting all the time.
Okay. well, for instance, Jim Good is really a psychology historian. And so he wrote about William Stevenson, but within an interesting context that kind of showed the progression of Stevenson's career. And then that was a nice segue into Mike Strickland's work that was very much focused on kind of visualizing Q methodology and finding ways to communicate. He's really a journalism person. And so he was very focused on ways of communication and communicating things relative to Q and within his discipline of journalism. And then Paul Stenner has done a lot of work with Q, but intertwined with constructivism. And he also wanted to write about how his research was basically buoyed by Steve Brown. And then I already mentioned Dave Gillespie a little bit, where his is really kind of a progressive story of what he did with Q, but within kind of a framework of Steve's continued influence on his research and his investigations. You want to add anything to that, Jim?
No, I think that's a really good summary of that kind of section. And there were people, you know, and again, as Sue said, we gave them wide latitude as to what they wanted to write about. And once we got a sort of abstract from each of them, that's when we decided that this formula made sense. Because there were people who wanted to write about what Steve really had meant to them in their life and in their career and so on and so forth. And there were other people who wanted to focus on methodological issues that they certainly had either learned from him or at least were informed by him. And so that formed that section. And then the last section were simply, you know, Q studies that people could see the utility of the method. And So that's really, and then of course the last section was, or the last thing we put in was a bibliography, so that people can have as up to the date as we could do it, at least at the time of the printing, of Steve's exhaustive bibliography, which I don't know, is more than 100 publications at least.
It's so very long. It's
very long.
I think it's like 20 something pages. I think that was, maybe that was just the Word document.
Yeah, maybe. And in the methodology section, you know, again, some very sort of important issues in the Q community about the methodology are addressed in those issues. Amanda Wolf on Q sorting, Sue on what a science of subjectivity might be. Robert Braswell's chapter on rotation of Q data and how he demonstrates some very important concepts in that chapter. It's really well done. And it takes on some of the folks in Q methodology who are insistent more on statistical technique, more preoccupied with that than perhaps they ought to be. And he demonstrates why that's the case. So there's some really interesting things in there. That article at the end of the section that Thomas and McEwen and I did on popular culture and how to use Q methodology to study popular culture, I think is, if I may say so myself, is an interesting chapter because it demonstrates how a Q methodology can be brought to the study of an area in which those who practice in the popular culture field, I can tell you, they have some difficulty with that because once you start throwing numbers around, they get all panicked because they believe you're going to be reductionist and you're going to miss the bigger picture in understanding the phenomenons of popular culture. But that's not at all the case. And what we demonstrate, I think, in this article is that what's interesting about popular culture is the popular, right? So the people's viewpoints about, in that case, the television show Breaking Bad, helps to explain why that television show was so resonant with the American public. So at any rate, I think that's an interesting chapter in that group of articles. They're all very interesting. I'm not saying that's more interesting than the others. It was just one that I'm more familiar with for obvious reasons. And then the applications section with articles by Ali and Kinsey. Ali is a graduate student of Dennis Kinsey's at Syracuse University. And that may have been one of the names that you weren't familiar with. Baker and Van Exel on Q methodology and questionnaires, which certainly, I guess, could have gone in the methodology section. Those are all decisions that, you know, you make that, is this methodology? Is this an application? Boss's article on the Constitution and the public mind. Again, an interesting article because Boss is one of Steve's earliest graduate students. And what he did his dissertation on public images of the Constitution, what it meant to people. And of course, he's doing this at a time of great turmoil in the country over the Vietnam War and so forth. He goes back 45 years later and gets many of the same people who did that Q sort in the early 1970s to do it again. And the interesting thing there is it shows great stability of those factors that he first got in, 1971 or 72, and again 45 years later. So it's an interesting look. And then McEwen and Thomas on civil religion, which was something that was of an area of both great interest to both of them. It's an outstanding application. So I think there's a lot in this book for people who are interested in subjectivity and interested in Q methodology.
Yeah, and at the risk of slighting the people that I don't mention, you know, I think the chapter that you mentioned there on rotation was a particularly important one, I think, both for me, because that's one aspect of Q that I don't have a strong grasp on. And it was really great to see it sort of laid out visually how different approaches to rotation can affect the conclusions you would draw from the same data set. But then also because I know that that's an issue that Steve Brown cares about a lot. And yes. You know, very often see him posting on the listserv and stuff that he has, you know, has strong opinions about the use of rotation and you know, how to do it. And as you said, you know, not just relying on the statistics to do the work for you when you're doing a Q study. So I really agree.
It's a really important chapter.
Yeah. And then I was also glad to see a chapter on combining Q method with surveys, because that was actually the topic of that article that I mentioned earlier that Steve published the response to me on. So it's good to see that that aspect of Q still getting attention. And I think that's also, you know, for listeners that aren't as familiar with Q, to see that, you know, you can combine Q method with other methodologies. You know, you don't have to just do Q. You can use Q and surveys and various other things to all get different perspectives on the same topic.
Yep.
Well, and I think also one of the neat things about the authors and the chapters, it just kind of ended up that everybody wrote about what they were most passionate about and what they typically would have had intense conversations with Steve Brown about. So, like, for instance, my chapter on the science of subjectivity, that came about mostly because when Steve and I have coffee or talk, a lot of times we talk about science and we talk about Q and we talk about subjectivity. So that just seemed to be the right topic. And I think that's true for all of the authors. I think that's one of the neat things that kind of, I mean, we couldn't have forced that to happen. It just kind of did.
Yeah, I'd echo that. I think that's exactly right. And I think it turned out to be a wise decision to give people as much latitude as we could, because I'm not sure that would have happened otherwise, you know? Yeah. I completely agree.
All right. So let's say somebody is, you know, listening to this podcast and they're like, wow, this Q methodology thing seems really cool. I'm interested in learning more about it, interested in, you know, maybe trying it out for myself. Obviously, one place that they could start is Steve Brown's work. You know, he's got his book, Political Subjectivity, that kind of lays out how Q works and, you know, lots of other articles that are in that bibliography. But is there anywhere else that you would suggest as kind of a starting point for somebody who's interested in Q, wants to sort of learn about it, try it out? Where should they go?
They could start off at the I4S website, which is www.qmethod.org. And there are links there to some videos on YouTube, including some old videos that have been digitized of Steve Brown lecturing. There is a link to our society's journal, Operant Subjectivity, which has a new home, and it is now going to be open access. So there's lots of articles by Steve Brown and William Stevenson and a plethora of others that they can access. There's some other resources up there as well. So I think that would be a good starting point. I'm also still a big fan of the Sage text, the Little Green Book, as we usually call it, by McCune and Thomas. It's their most recent one is the second edition, which is 2013. That's a really good starting point if one is a little overwhelmed by seeing the thickness of Steve Brown's book, although that is very much a kind of a Bible of Q methodology. I always say, if you're looking for the answer to a question, right, about a variety of things related to Q, chances are you can find it in Steve Brown's Political Subjectivity book. Jim, do you have any other suggestions?
I think those are all outstanding suggestions. That, you know, and as Stender mentioned as well, there are articles that Steve has written, as well as Stevenson, obviously. I remember Steve wrote a primer on Q methodology, and I can't recall if Operant Subjectivity printed that or not, or whether it's just sort of out there. But it's also, and that can be found on a Google search. There's PDFs of it available. The Political Subjectivity is also available as a PDF. And I believe there's a link on the Society's webpage.
Yes, well, yes, there is.
So there's all kinds of things that folks can, but I agree with Sue. The website should be the first stop.
All right. Well, as we're moving towards the end of our time here, I'd like to ask you each what you're working on next. What are your upcoming projects, whether Q related or not?
Okay. Well, I've got a couple of things going on, but one thing that I'm really concentrating on is an edited volume on applications of Q methodology to the study of popular culture. So that's something that I'm working on. But I'm also working on case studies, individual case studies. I've done several of these, but I'm revisiting one of my subjects. And I'm also going to do something with a family member of that subject. So I'm looking at family dynamics and how political ideas are formed within a family unit and so forth. And when I say single case, just, you know, we usually talk about Q methodology is a number of people responding to the same stimulus items. And then we do the factor analysis and we have these various groups of people with various viewpoints. In a single case, you take one subject and you give them a Q sort, and they sort that Q sort, the sample of statements, a number of times under various conditions of instruction. So it might be, what is my view? They do it. Then maybe a day or two later, they do, what would my mother's view be? Two or three days later, they do, what would my father's view, what would my father like, what view would my father like me to have? And this kind of thing, until you can use that strategy to tap into psychodynamics and so forth. So I'm back, I've done a long answer to your question. I'm involved in single case research again, but I'm also working on a book prospectus for applications of Q into popular culture.
And I'm in the throes of a study, just kind of starting off developing my concourse, but it will be looking at retention of engineering students in college, undergraduates, why they might change their major and why they might stay. There's a lot of studies, both very quantitative and very qualitative, that look at this topic. But as I was talking about earlier, they look at things more or less in aggregate. And I'm looking for kind of interaction. So is there a certain combination of within a perspective that leads students to change their major, say, from mechanical engineering to business? So I'm working on that. I'm also working on finalizing a manuscript with two of my former graduate students that were not Q methodology grad students. They were actually in chemistry, but they were both visiting professors last year, and we had a little grant. So we were looking at how students feel about having a chemistry oral exam as part of the assessment in their chemistry classes. The results might surprise you. So we're kind of at the tail end of finalizing that manuscript and figuring out where we're going to submit it. And in the meantime, as seems to be the case, I've been reading some things about diversity and inclusion and academic freedom. Those topics have both been in the news a lot recently with an adjunct being fired, even though her institution says she wasn't fired, for sewing a picture in her art class of Muhammad. And so I'm kind of got a new study percolating in the back of my head that might look at that kind of interaction between academic freedom and diversity inclusion and how they might fit together. But, you know, that's just something I've been thinking about the last 2 days.
All right. Well, that all sounds really interesting. I'll definitely be looking forward to seeing what comes of those projects. So thank you both so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
I'll add a little shout out as well to Dan Thomas, your third co-editor, who wasn't able to join us today.
He was instrumental in this project.
Absolutely.
Yep. All right. This has been a conversation with James Rhodes and Susan Ramlow, authors along with Dan Thomas of Cultivating Q Methodology, Essays Honoring Stephen R. Brown, published last year by the International Society for the Scientific Study of Subjectivity.